Right now, we'll turn our attention to Del Mar and the big weekend, really. Next weekend, too. The rest of the meet has got some top-level racing, of course. And Brad joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. We go from Canterbury to Del Mar and looking forward to a big weekend down at the seaside. We've got a good graded stakes race this afternoon, the Rancho Bernardo for fillies and mares, and of course on Saturday, it's the big one with five graded stakes, including the Pacific Classic. So a lot to look forward to this weekend down at Del Mar.
Well, and I said that we would open the conversation with that Rancho Bernardo because this looks like a decent betting opportunity.
Well, it is a decent betting opportunity if you think you can beat the favorite sneaking out. I think she's pretty solid in this field. I mean, she returned to form last time out with a good win over Bellafina, who I suspect may have been best that day. She did not have the greatest of trips. But at any rate, sneaking out, she was a long shot against Bellafina. She was 7-1. She got the perfect trip. Bellafina went back to Saratoga and validated that victory by sneaking out by running second in the Ballerina, Bellafina did. So sneaking out, beat a good filly. She did it in fast time. She's won over the Del Mar racetrack. She's got a forwardly placed running style. She's versatile. She's one of those favorites that I just can't find a flaw in at all. So sneaking out is going to be tough. I think that Peter Miller's recent acquisition, unique factor, she started three times for Miller and her new connections. That's probably the main danger. She's drawn perfectly on the outside, and we've seen all summer long at Del Mar, the outside posts in sprint races have held a decided advantage. So unique factor, 4-1, the second choice. To me, it's kind of a chalky type of race. I do believe that sneaking out will be tough. Unique factor, if she shows up in her West Coast debut, she could give sneaking out a run for her money.
I thought getting into chocolate back to Cliff Sice, made the trip to New York, and of course the Y Gods use Bill Mott on the East Coast. I thought Into Chocolate at 8-1. I wanted to try to work in.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, her most recent start on Thoroughbred, she got a 3.75, and that puts her right in the hunt. In fact, that makes her arguably the second choice in the race. Into Chocolate, she could, well, she probably will get bet down from 8-1 because we know how much influence speed figures have on the betting. And Into Chocolate off that 3.75 Thoroughbred number and 82 buyer, she's probably going to get bet down. It's interesting because Sice now trains Into Chocolate again. Of course, he had her early in her career. And then when we talk about the Torrey Pines on Saturday, Into Chocolate's full sister, Secret Keepers, making her stakes debut in the Torrey Pines on Saturday. So, yeah, Into Chocolate ships returns to California in top form with a big recent number, and she'll be running on late. She's drawn in post two, not the greatest of draw, but she's a contender in here.
You mentioned something about the figs and about the speed, and it occurs to me, considering the time we have spent over the last 2 days, Andy Beyer was with us on Wednesday, Brad, and then yesterday Pat Cummings continued the conversation regarding the G-Max timing. How have you been observing and dealing with the inaccurate times and the adjustments?
Well, it's been a very challenging summer for the timing system at Del Mar, and like everybody else, I'm leaning on the timer and winemaker, John Lees, to provide us with some hand-timed, fractions and final times that are actually accurate. So that's really all I can really say about that whole situation. It's been a tough meet for the timing system, and you would think that in year 2020, with all the technology and the advances that we have made, we can't even get the timing right on a horse race. So it's extremely frustrating. I'm glad that it finally came out. I'm glad that it is being addressed. And I think that Del Mar announced yesterday that the grass races for the remainder of the meet will be hand-timed by John Lee, so we won't have the debacle that we've had the first month or so. But it's been a challenging, frustrating summer so far with regards to timing. And for handicappers that adhere to the principles of how to bet these these things, you know, timing is it's kind of an important deal. So I'm glad that it's being looked at, and I hope that the proper remedy is found soon.
Well, as part of that announcement, too, from Del Mar yesterday, they said that they expect that for the Bing Crosby meet in the fall, that they'll be able to use the GMAX timing successfully and without adjustment. But there is nobody that is going to simply accept this until it's clear that the mechanism is in line with the beam and the hand timing. I mean, this is such an important and really basic element as you reference and as Andy Beyer did. Randy Moss is on the absolute warpath over it and is thoroughly disgusted, and rightly so. And this is not going away until it's rectified. Let's dive into the action. And I do want to mention, Brad, before we get into the stakes sequence, people are going to want to watch the Del Mar First, a 5 p.m. Eastern Time post. And there is some heavy pedigree involved in here, and the 1.3 million Princess Noor, the Not This Time filly from the OBS sale for Baffert and Zidane Racing. But there's a half to Firing Line, there's a half to Good Magic, there's half to there's the Peachtree Road, who's a half to the Dam of American Pharoah. There's a lot going on in the opener.
Well, we need it, because the two-year-old division, both Colts and Phillies this summer, has been lacking. That's one of the things that we look forward to most every summer at Del Mar, is watching these, you know, these high-profile two-year-olds and flashy two-year-olds make their career debuts, their first, their second starts, and running the Best Pal and the Del Mar Futurity, the Sorrento, and the Debutante. And we have not had very many flashy two-year-old winners. Dr. Scheibel, the Colt, a couple weeks ago, was very impressive in his maiden win, but he's kind of been the highlight. And as far as the Phillies go, they've been even more lacking. Other than My Girl Red, who won the Sorrento, it's been a very slow summer for two-year-old Phillies. And even My Girl Red, with her 65 buyer speed figure, she's not going to impress that many people. She was far more impressive visually than the final time or the number. But, yeah, we're looking forward to seeing these fillies run in the first race. And Princess Noor, $1.35 million, a daughter of First Crop sire Not This Time. And Not This Time is off to a pretty good start as a debut stallion. I think he's had 17 starters, four of them won first time out. And Princess Noor, who works 20-1 at the two-year-old sale, she has continued to train very well at Del Mar. According to Daily Racing Forum clocker Toby Terrell, who had some very thumbs-up comments regarding Princess Noor's August 15th workout, that was a minute flat from the gate, and she got a big B-plus from Terrell. She's trained by Baffert, Princess Noor is, and she's a 2-1 favorite. But Baffert also has another fast-working debut filly by the name of Flash Magic by Pioneer of the Nile, and she's a sibling to none other than Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner Good Magic. So it looks like Baffert has this race kind of surrounded. Princess Noor from down in post number two, not the greatest of post position, but if she runs to her workouts and she's been training fast ever since the two-year-old sale early this year, she should be tough. But Flash Magic on the outside, she also has some good workouts. And she worked in company with a stakes winner named Eclair just a week or so ago. So she should be live also. Princess Noor and Flash Magic, 2-1 and 5-2. From a betting perspective, really not a whole lot to sink your teeth into. It's a field of seven, but those two are the principals in the opener.
Doesn't take long for the stakes action to get going. The Green Flash, five furlong sprint, and we've got a couple of major, it seems like, a couple of major candidates, and the return by Andy Mathis of Mike's Tisnow, one of the underappreciated stories of the season, I thought, Brad, was him being away a year with Mike's Tisnow and coming back having won the Albany in 2019. He's away a year and he wins the Albany in 2020.
Well, he wired the field in the Albany two consecutive years, and I really got a kick out of reading Privman's advanced story on this race, because he talked to Andy Mathis And Mathis was talking about how Mike Tisnow has run two of his best races off one-year layoff. And Mathis said, the quote was fantastic. He said, maybe I'm coming back too soon in 2.5 months. Maybe it's too quick of a turnaround. I thought that was a fantastic quote. It was obviously tongue-in-cheek. 2.5 months is plenty of time. But the point is that Mike Tisnow runs well fresh. And the fresher he is, the better he is what Mathis told Pridman. So this is a good, solid, fast gelding by Slew's Tisnow, and he could be tough to catch. It's the perfect spot for him. He's got all the right numbers. He's drawn outside. Can you win on the front end to turf sprint at Del Mar? Absolutely. We've had 6 turf sprints so far this summer with the rails at zero. 2 of them were won wire-to-wire, and since the second week of the meet, 6 out of 19 wire-to-wire winners. So the course plays fair. Mike Tisnow is fast. He is definitely the one to catch. And just a terrific training job by Andy Mathis, bringing this guy back from a one-year layoff to win the Albany for the second straight year. I think that this race kind of goes through one of the shippers, either Mike Tisnow from Northern California or the horse that I kind of like is number 7, Chaos Theory. Claimed for 62.5 in June at Churchill Downs by Sadler and Ronis. And this horse, his numbers are good. He's proven against stakes quality sprinters. In fact, he won a stakes race at Fairgrounds in 2019, came back and finished second in that stakes race earlier this year. He's been training super. In fact, last Sunday morning, Chaos Theory had his final workout for the race, and it was over the Del Mar Turf Course, and I happened to be standing right behind Sadler in the grandstand watching Chaos Theory fly through the lane, and Sadler was ecstatic. He was over the moon at how well this colt or this gelding floated over the Del Mar grass course. It was only a half-mile solo workout, but he looked good doing it. He has acclimated well to Del Mar, just recently arrived here from Los Alamitos. And I think the Chaos Theory, I think he can sit back, come and catch Mike Tisnow. Those are the two to me. Mike Tisnow on the front end, Chaos Theory coming from behind.
I also, I've got the two of them. I went 8-3-1-7 and thought that Baja Sur deserved attention. And I am a mammoth Sparkyville fan. And that return to Del Mar was awfully good. And I think he could get a very sneaky trip behind the speed from the inside.
Yeah, he could. He's the 123-pound high weight. He's the 5-2 favorite on the morning line. And, you know, it's funny watching the ebbs and flows of hot and cold trainers, hot and cold jockeys. And Mike Smith has not had a great summer so far. I think he's 3-for-40 this summer at Del Mar. But the ride that he put up on Sparkyville last time out is one reason why Smith is such a top rider. He saved every inch of ground, he waited, he angled out, and he won by a head. It was a good, solid win with a perfect trip, Sparkyville. He's going to have to try to orchestrate a similar trip down on the inside, field of 8. If he can get that same trip again, he could win. Baja Sur, I was a huge fan of this guy last fall going into the winter meet, and I don't know, it just seems like he's falling short. He finished behind Sparkyville. He finished behind Mike Tisnow. I think he's just getting outrun by better horses. He shows up every time, Baja Sur does, but he seems to lose a lot more often than he wins lately.
You know, I got to ask you a question that just popped in my head looking at this group, and specifically regarding, and this is not so much a question as an aside, and I'm going to look into this. With Slew's Tisnow, it occurs to me Joe Lacombe has left the game, hasn't he?
I haven't seen his name in a while. Now that you bring it up, so that's entire. It's possible. Like, I don't have the answer.
Huh? And I know he's got to be up there in years. When we first started the show, he was one of the first owners and breeders that I got to know a little and. They had the two brothers, right? Slew's Tisnow and Slew's Tizzy.
That sounds right.
And they were both terrific. All right, that's a weekend project. Let's turn to the Torrey Pines, and they're going to go a mile on the main track. These are the 3-year-old fillies, and it feels like a bit of a hungry bunch. Somebody's going to break through here, Brad, and get themselves a graded stake win.
You know what's interesting about this race is it's, you know, there's five graded stakes races on Saturday, and this, on paper at least, looks to be the least significant of the five. There's just not a whole lot. They're three-year-old fillies, largely unproven, going a mile for a $100,000 purse. But then when you look back at some of the recent winners of this race, go back 1 year. Fighting Mad won this race a year ago. She disappeared. She has reemerged this summer as the top main track fillier mare. How about Stellar Wind in 2015? She won the Torrey Pines. She went on to have an outstanding career. And in 2013, who won the Torrey Pines? None other than Beholder. So this is, it's kind of an interesting race. Yeah, it's a race that has some recent history on its side. And who knows which of these fillies is going to, you know, if any, pop up and maybe become something down the road. There's a couple of unproven, virtually untested fillies in this field, at least untested at the stakes level, including number two, Secret Keeper. She's that full sister to Into Chocolate, and Harvest Moon, who has the benefit of a two-turn allowance race last time out at Del Mar. Those are the two that I think are going to attract most of the support. Bob Baffert has Provocation stretching out for the first time. She's going to be a factor up on the front end. But the manner in which Secret Keeper won both her starts, and I don't really know what she had behind her in either one of those, but she did it the right way. She finished well in both sprints. She's not a closing sprinter trying to stretch out. This is a filly who has natural speed. She has a pedigree to stay at least a mile. And I think that Secret Keeper has the chance to maybe become something very, very good. And she's going to have to be, because she faces a filly who's already proven around two turns and is actually slightly faster on numbers. And that's Harvest Moon, the 2-1 favorite on the morning line, who she, you know, she won for fun the other day by more than four lengths. She has three races around two turns, whereas Secret Keeper has never raced two turns. Those look like the two most prominent individuals in the Torrey Pines, but Provocation interests me on the stretch out just because Baffert knows who he's up against. He knows that he's going to have to run against Secret Keeper again, and he seemed kind of bullish about Provocation stretching out when I chatted with him briefly last weekend. So it's a good, solid field of untested 3-year-old fillies going a mile, and one of these fillies, maybe more, will perhaps go on to bigger and better things. But I like Secret Keeper on the stretch out for trainer Cliff Seist, one of my favorite trainers out there. I've known him for a long time. He does a terrific job, and he has his hands on a very good filly in Secret Keeper. She's listed at 7-2. She could get bet down slightly, but I like Secret Keeper on the stretch out.
I thought Aurelia Garland deserved a little bit of attention off the good try at Prairie Meadows in the Iowa Oaks. Then there's Merneith all the way outside for Baffert, who has been just a complete series of frustrations. Other than the breakthrough win, you know, she was so heralded going back to the beginning of the year, Brad, and has been a beaten favorite three times in six starts, and at some point maybe she puts it together. She certainly seems to be working nicely and was working well into those two starts, and it feels like Baffert's, you know, trying everything. Put her on the grass, that didn't work. I don't know. Merneith owes somebody some money.
Well, yeah, it's she's kind of a bizarre filly. Going into the winter, I think she would have ranked on the short list of Baffert's top three-year-old filly prospects.
Yep.
And the way that she trains in the morning would suggest that she is a potential stakes filly. But she doesn't reproduce her morning form in the afternoon. She's basically a morning glory. She has all the ability in the world, but it doesn't come out in the afternoon.
Well, you can't geld her.
Can't do that. All you can do is retire her and breed her.
No, they'll keep working at it. She it might be one of these that needs maturity and to be, you know, that will just, they'll, she's shown flashes, obviously, and they'll put it together. Let's go to the Del Mar Handicap, which starts the late action and is the kickoff to the late pick five. And the mile and three-eighths turf standard with United down inside for Richard Mandela and the Roths, and feels like an inside-outside job here, because I thought that United and Originaire, the 1 and the 10, looked like, you know, the two major players only.
Yeah, United, you know, other than Maximum Security in the Pacific Classic, United is likely to be one of the shortest priced horses on the card for good reason. He's won three consecutive graded stakes races. And even though he won the Eddie Reed last time by only a half length as the 7-5 favorite, I don't know that he's getting enough credit for that win. And the reason I say that is because that was a 1 1/8 race, and that is shorter than United wants to run. He wants to run 1 3/8 and beyond. So he won a race. He was the class of the field going in and the favorite, and everybody expected him to win. But he did it at a distance that could have potentially compromised him. He got the job done. He's now stretching out to a distance that's more beneficial to him, and I think he's going to be very tough to beat. That's hardly a secret. He's 8-5 on the morning line. And then after that, I'll tell you what, Steve, they all kind of look the same. I thought the one interesting horse possibly at a price is number 3, Combatant. You don't see too many winners of the Santa Anita Handicap show up later that summer on grass, but that's what Combatant is doing. And to like him, you have to kind of accept on blind faith a little bit, but he did not have a good trip into San Diego. He hopped in the air when the gates opened, and that was it. He did not have a good trip in the Oaklawn Handicap. Maybe he was overmatched in both those races, but he did win the Santa Anita Handicap over midcourt to finish third that day. And Sadler is confident that this guy will run all day. So that's why he's back on grass. He's a son of Scat Daddy. Sadler believes that he'll get the 1 3/8, and he's kind of an unknown, unproven. Look, maybe he's just completely off form and doesn't want to do it anymore, but I don't think Sadler would be putting him in this race unless he believed that this horse was doing well enough to take a shot. He's 8-1 on the morning line. I look for Combatant to at least outrun his odds, and if he runs back to his big cap victory, he could possibly give United a battle. But it's a shot at a price. You just have to draw a line through his two most recent starts.
Well, and, you know, Steve Asmussen gave him some time on grass going back to last summer and into the fall. And certainly, you know, those two efforts, the allowance try at Saratoga and at Kentucky Downs, they were both credible. He is by Scat Daddy and out of a boundary, unraced boundary mare. And I can understand this. Why not? And then we'll discuss the inverse when it comes to the situation in the Pacific Classic, because Sharp Samurai, Mark Glatt, has been flirting with the dirt tries for him. And so we've got dirt horses on turf and turf horses on the dirt. Red King looks like he's moving forward.
Oh, gosh, no doubt about it. I mean, his win in the San Juan, it's true that he got the all-time perfect trip, but you don't win a grass route by more than 4 lengths unless you're very good. And Red King is very good. Not only that, but trainer Phil D'Amato has had uncanny success in the Grade 2 Del Mar Handicap. He's won this race 5 of the last 6 years. So Red King, freshened since the San Juan. He gets Umberto Rispoli again, and Rispoli, what a top grass rider this guy has turned out to be in California. He's fun to watch. He saves every inch of ground. He very rarely gets stopped. He can finish. And he's on Red King. Red King, I can't see him at 8-1. I think he's going to get a little bit of play off that big win in the San Juan. This is a sharp horse in good form. First start since late June, but yeah, he is a definite contender. And you mentioned Originaire earlier, and I probably should at least talk briefly about him. I don't really know what to do with him. I understand that he's got the right figures and all that stuff, but I don't know. He just kind of ran evenly in the Eddie Reed, unless I'm missing something. Finished third behind United in the Whittingham, 2 starts back. I don't know what to do with Originaire other than respect him because he's finishing close to good company. As far as up on the win end, I'm just not sure if he's, you know, good enough to handle Grade 2 company, or at least upset them.
We'll talk about the Del Mar Oaks in a second, but a quick note about the start of the late pick 4, which is a second level allowance optional claimer, and a number of good horses. They're going to go a mile on the main track, and of course the entire internet rooting for the Samantha Siegel Exacta.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, I'll be doing the same thing, but probably not in the same order that most people would prefer. Extra Hope, owned by Samantha Siegel, makes his first start of the year. This is a good, you know, lightly raced four-year-old who he could still turn out to be a top older horse. We haven't seen him since he finished second in the great Grade 3 Native Diver at Del Mar last fall. He's making his first start of 2020. I don't know if he's cranked for a top effort first start back. He's arguably the best horse in the race because, you know, he's been running. He ran against good three-year-olds early in his career is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if he's, you know, ready to fire his best shot first start off the bench. But the other Samantha Siegel, I know what he's going to do. It's number four, Take the 101, and he's going to take the lead and try to wire the field. And why can't he do that? Here's another case where to like this horse, you have to overlook two recent misfires. Last time was on grass. Two starts back, I don't know what happened at Los Alamitos, but if you go three starts back to his one other than win at Santa Anita, that was a fast win. Wire to wire, we know that this guy has a touch of class, at least against cowbred three-year-olds. He's a two-time stakes winner against cowbred three-year-olds early in his career. He's now five. I'm going to overlook his, you know, ninth and sixth place finishes in his two most recent starts and suggest that maybe Take the 101, takes the lead, and goes wire to wire in this one-mile race. You can win a mile race on the front end at Del Mar, and that's what Take the 101 is going to do. He's 8-1, and to me, he's one of the more intriguing gambles on the card. Look, he might hit the wall at the quarter pole just like he did his last two starts, but at 8-1, I think he's worth gambling on, and then he'll have to, of course, hold off Extra Hope.
Well, the Del Mar Oaks, as I mentioned early in the show, outstanding. And this is a race that never disappoints. A mile and an eighth, and you've got a lot of horses that have been knocking heads, Brad. And then there's the addition of not one, but two first-time North America types. And I thought that Neige Blanche, that Leonard Powell sends, had a lot of merit. And I'm anxious for some insight from Toby Terrell and from Andy Harrington. There's also Miss Extra debuting in the United States, coming out of the Prix de Diane for Mandela. Has kept very good company and won the Group 2 Prix de Sandringham as Shanti. And this is just a outstanding group of three-year-old fillies on the lawn.
Yeah, it's a really good, evenly matched group is what it is. And, you know, Laura's Light is the best local filly. She's won her last four turf races, all stakes races. She has won at a mile and one-eighth. She did that in the Honeymoon two starts back. Warren Showtime is a multiple stakes winner. She did not get the greatest of trips or strategy last time out. She was a lot farther off the pace than her trainer Craig Lewis would have preferred. Those are the two best locals, but you know they're good fillies, and I'm not going to knock them. It just seems to me that the Grade One Del Mar Oaks this summer is ripe for a new shooter, and you mentioned a couple of them, those being Miss Extra, and my top selection is Neige Blanche for trainer Leonard Powell. She's been here long enough to post three easy, you know, maintenance type workouts. She gets Lasix for her U.S. debut. She gets Flavian Pratt. Leonard Powell has had plenty of success with similar imports. In fact, he also starts Geedy, who ran very well, finishing second in the San Clemente. But I think this race kind of goes through the Europeans. It feels like the type of race where, you know, you can't knock the locals. Who's going to knock Laura's Light or Warren Showtime? They're good, solid fillies. But at a mile and one-eighth, I suspect that Laura's Light is really pushing it as far as distance goes. Warren Showtime, when she shows up and gets the right trip, she is good enough to be competitive against this group. But it just looks like the type of race that is tailor-made for a top-class European import. And Neige Blanche and Miss Extra, they're both group winners overseas. I don't know how they've acclimated. I don't know how long Miss Extra has been here. I know that Neige Blanche has been here long enough to post three workouts, so she's coming into the race in top order. But those are the two. I'm going to sink or swim with the Europeans in here. I just think that this race is ready-made for a new shooter coming from across the pond.
Well, and, you know, there's one kind of hidden angle in here, and that is that Flavien Prat can speak French to Neige Blanche.
That's true. And you know what? Umberto Rispoli can speak Italian, but I don't know that, you know, multi-language ability is going to do either one of them any good in the Del Mar Oaks. But they're on the two good, they're the two best grass riders, Prat and Rispoli. And I think they're on two of the top candidates in this year's Oaks.
Outstanding. Let's turn to the Pacific Classic, and the storyline here is pretty clear. Maximum Security off the absolute horror show trip and still gets up to win the San Diego, and now comes back and basically faces, you know, the same two major players in Higher Power and Midcourt. There is an invader from Argentina in here that is a mystery horse, and I mentioned Sharp Samurai for Glatt getting a big opportunity in a dirt grade one. And Peter Urton tries Dark Vader, who's, you know, a bit of a grade two, grade three type, but nice enough. But all eyes, obviously, on Maximum Security.
No doubt about it. He's the even money favorite, and he did overcome a very compromising trip to win the San Diego. That was his first start in 5 months, and it was a means to an end. Baffert was using that race to prep for the Pacific Classic, and it was, what a bizarre race. I mean, it's fun to just go back and watch it. I've done it a couple times. Maximum Security popped the gate and looked like he was going to just take charge. Okay, fine. So you got the best horse, put him on the lead and say, come and catch me. But then he was challenged immediately by Midcourt, and Cedillo took back a little bit. And then along comes Higher Power and puts Maximum Security in a jackpot. He gets shuffled all the way back to third. So here's a horse that was leading into the first turn, shuffled back to third, and then he re-rallied wide and wore down Midcourt to get up right on the shadow of the wire while giving away 5 pounds that day. And although the final time was not that great and he won by only a nose, He did some things in that race that only a good horse will do, and that is overcome compromising circumstances to get the win. And that's been Maximum Security's entire career. He's run against 75 horses and finished in front of 74 of them. And all you have to do is go back and look at the 2019 Kentucky Derby to show as an illustration of the tenacity and bravery and courage of Maximum Security, because turning for home, he was going to be swallowed on both sides by a wall of horses, and he refused to do it. He just kept on running, and he crossed the wire first. So Maximum Security is one tough son of a gun. We saw it in Saudi Arabia in February, where he did not have the greatest of trips. He was under a drive on the far turn, and he somehow found a way to win that race as well. So Maximum Security, he overcomes adversity, and he's trained very well since that race. I still think in my gut there's a question of a mile and one quarter, which might seem like a dumb thing to say for a horse that won the Kentucky Derby. I'm just not sure that this is his preferred distance, but he goes into the race as the best horse in the field. But they're stretching out from a mile and a 16th to a mile and one quarter, and now they're playing the game of Higher Power. And we know how good Higher Power is at a mile and one quarter on dirt. He romped last year in the Pacific Classic. He finished a good third in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and he finished second behind Improbable, who I think would win this race had he been in it. In the Gold Cup. So the last three times that Higher Power raced a mile and one quarter on the main track, he ran a winning race all three times. The Pacific Classic, Breeders' Cup Classic, okay, he's third best, but third in the Breeders' Cup Classic is a pretty good effort, and then runner-up in the Gold Cup. So I think, and so does his trainer Sadler, believes that the distance increase from a mile and a 16th to a mile and one quarter can only benefit Higher Power. And Savin was never intending to run Higher Power in the San Diego. The only reason he did is because the horse was doing so well and he was still fresh because he hadn't campaigned during spring when Santa Anita had been shut down. So he kind of spun him around the track, and yeah, he finished third, beating more than six lengths. It doesn't matter. tomorrow, Saturday, is what Higher Power has been targeting the entire season. And he's going to show up, and he's going to give Maximum Security a battle. Those are the two in the Pacific Classic. Midcourt, I guess, has a chance up on the front end. And you mentioned Shark Samurai, Stephen. To me, he's the one horse in the race that, if you want to gamble, maybe he's the one on which to gamble. Early this meet, I was talking to Glad about Sharp Samurai. He goes, man, I'm really thinking I want to run this horse on dirt because he trains so well over the dirt track at Del Mar. And he has run previously on dirt, Sharp Samurai has. But he just didn't have there wasn't the right spot to do it in. He didn't want to do it in the San Diego for 200 against Maximum Security and Higher Power. And indications were, even as recently as last weekend, that Sharp Samurai, okay, he was going to enter the Pacific Classic, but chances are he was going to show up Sunday on grass in the Del Mar Mile. Well, lo and behold, here's Sharp Samurai in the Pacific Classic, and as of Thursday morning, Glass said he's running Saturday. So he's the horse that maybe we don't know what he is yet on dirt. We do know that he is good enough to finish second by half length behind United in the Eddie Reed, and he did it in a manner that was not at all planned. Glatt believed that Sharp Samurai would be forwardly placed in the Eddie Reed. Instead, he dropped clear back to the rear of the field, and he finished very, very well to miss by only half length. Maybe with a little bit different forwardly placed trip, he could have finished closer to United, if not upset him outright. But he's coming into the race in good form, switching surfaces, 8-1 on the morning line. He's the one horse that I think could probably has a chance anyway to outrun his morning line odds.
It's an interesting group, and as we were talking, and I mentioned this Merinac, I guess is the pronunciation. And I see where Toby Terrell has already posted tomorrow's clocker report, drf.com/clocker. And just one note about the Invaders work tab. Just said, gave him a B- for that work on the 16th, working hard to the pressure. And so not a lot to go on, but a horse that absolutely has gone, you know, a route of ground, and in fact went as far as a mile and 9/16, a distance we don't see that often in America. That was in the Nacional, which is you know, a big race. That one, you know, there's San Ysidro and there's Hippodromo, and he won both. Actually, he didn't win the Jockey Club, but he won the Nacional, and he also was second in the Pellegrini, which is a big deal as well. So this feels like one of those throwback horses a little bit, a la Bayakoa and the like.
Well, yes, and he's a Group 1 winner in South America, and you can't take that away from him. But, boy, you talk about ambitious placement for a North American debut. I mean, it's one thing to come from Europe to California, where you're still in the same hemisphere, but from Southern Hemisphere to the Northern Hemisphere, that is a challenge. And it's one reason why you don't see that many South American imports come back firing like a European would. I can't see Merinac winning this race.
No.
Just can't see it.
Yeah,
he's up against it. He finished second in a pair of Group Ones. I don't quite understand what they're doing here, especially considering who they're up against. Maximum Security and Higher Power are top class horses. Midcourt is a good horse as well. So it's an ambitious placement, and you know, more power to them, but I won't be having any of my wagering capital on Merinac.
Brad, before we talk about Sunday's Del Mar Mile and get a glance ahead to Sunday, what are you doing in the nightcap, the 11th, a mile and a 16th, first level allowance that'll end a quality sequence? And I should also mention, there's, I don't know what the pool is going into today and tomorrow, but there's a force out of the pick six tomorrow as well. Of course, you're up against people putting in $70,000 plays, but FYI.
Yeah, that's another topic entirely. That's one reason why I don't play the pick six anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't try. I can't play against, you know, computer guys who have access to the pools and know what combinations are covered. To me, the pick six has been all but ruined with these single-ticket jackpot schemes and allowing some people access to the probables and all that stuff. So it's not a bet for me, the pick six. There's virtually no – I think somebody had a single ticket last weekend, so the whatever – single-ticket pool there
That's
is
right.
will be come from Friday into Saturday. It's going to be minuscule, not the type of bet that I would play. Race 11, this is a scramble. It's a one other than turf allowance, and I spent so much time on this race, it's embarrassing to even discuss, and I ended up with number five, Salvatore Mundi, who finished second last time out at this class level. He ran well over this turf course. His main rival is to his inside, the morning line favorite, number four, Shadow Sphinx, making his first start since June. Those are the two, Salvatore Mundi with Rispoli, Shadow Sphinx with Pratt. And after that, boy, it just becomes wide open. I thought Tiberius Mercurius had a look at it. And Southern King is actually going to scratch and come and run on Sunday, I believe. So that race got a little bit easier for Salvatore Mundi, number five, and Shadow Sphinx, number four.
I'll mention, and I haven't done all the effort in here, but it is a crazily well-matched group. And Desmond Doss on the outside for Steve Maiotti, coming out of the restricted company effort, and looks like Ostini has a little bit of a look, but interesting that that one. I was going to say loses Drayden Van Dyke, but Van Dyke didn't. That's obviously a conscious move, it seems. By is that right? Drayden doesn't have a mount.
Which horse are you referring to, Steve?
Oh, Ostini, the Cruel Jack.
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I'm not sure, other than the obvious, and that's that Eric Kruljack is having one hell of a summer at Del Mar. 13-1 upset under Van Dyke last time out. Yeah, gets a new jockey change.
Interesting. And Tabs Hernandez, you know, and speaking of riders, Giovanni Franco, it's astounding. How can he be winless?
Well, it's bizarre. 0-44. How about George Velez? 0-45. Osiel Espinoza, 0-24. One thing about summer at Del Mar, whether you are a bettor or a trainer or a jockey or an owner, boy, if you get into a funk during this meet, and we have all been there, it is extremely difficult to extricate yourself from a wagering slump or a riding or training slump. This is a meet where, you know, streaks kind of get exacerbated. If you're going well, you can you know, make a boatload of money. And if you're cold, you better wrap up in a hurry and kind of save yourself for fall. But, yeah, when you're cold like those guys are, it's a tough slump to break out of at this meet.
This is a challenging finish to a really good sequence. The thing is, there's a couple of spots in the pick five, for instance, that you might be able to kind of tiptoe through. So you're probably best served spreading a little bit in the nightcap to bring it all home. And before we wrap up with the always fabulous Brad Free, the Del Mar Mile on Sunday, and this is terrific. Also features a North American first-time visitor, Royal Ship, a Brazilian bred, now with Mandela for Sienna and Rick Porter.
Yeah, Royal Ship is a very interesting horse, and you know, earlier I talked about the challenge of you know, these South Americans making their U.S. debut, you know, in California. I think in this case, Royal Ship has been with Mandela long enough. You can see that he's, you know, working very, very well. He's got a couple of bullet workouts going three quarters. This is a horse that has outstanding form in Brazil. Mandela has had tons of success with these South American imports. And Royal Ship You know, this is an evenly matched bunch, and assuming that Sharp Samurai does run on Saturday in the Pacific Classic, I don't really see that this race has any killers in the field. Mo Forza was a top turf miler-ish, mile and one-eighth, against his own age group, but we haven't seen him since January. Trainer Peter Miller's comebackers typically race themselves back into condition rather than fire first start back, but Mo Forza is a good horse. And but after that, it's kind of a mishmash of a group. Even the horse that I picked on top, a cowbred by the name of Galilean, I don't know that he can, you know, swing with these grade two caliber horses. The point that I'm making, this is not the strongest Del Mar mile that we've seen, and this would be the type of spot that Mandela and Smith might be able to orchestrate an upset with Royal Ship. I mean, you talk about a horse that's on a roll. Five consecutive wins, and he went right up the ladder in Brazil, culminating with the Group 1 victory. So he gets Lasix, he's training well, catches a modest group, and I consider Royal Ship a contender against the Cowbred Galilean and Kiwi's Dream, who ran an unbelievable race in the Wicker on opening weekend. He set insane fractions, 45, 108-4, just got worn down late by Bob and Jackie. If Kiwi's Dream can slow down just a little bit, he might be long gone. It's a very evenly matched group. I picked Galilean, the Cowbred, on top.
Well, and I use this race for beat pick, and I can't pick against Barry Abrams and Mo Forza. Wherever this horse goes, we're behind him, and rooting for Barry. So we're on Mo Forza, and I used Royal Ship as the alternate. It feels like, you know, looking at that workout pattern, it feels like Miller, you know, is bringing him along and is going to put the blinkers on, which is interesting, and try to get him involved a little bit early, considering at the end of last year, he started. It's kind of interesting, actually, that he early on in his career, he was running late. Then he put the blinkers on, but now he's taking them off, I should say, not putting them on, and maybe he's just reached a maturity level where he doesn't need the hood as much.
Well, that could be. It could be that he's going to, you know, experiment first start back and see how he runs. Hard to know what's going into his thinking, but I'm always a little reluctant to take a horse like Mo Forza coming in off a layoff for a trainer who does better with horses that have already, you know, reached form. I respect this horse. He's good. And if he runs back to his Mathis Brothers mile, he's fast enough to beat these. I'm just not sure if he can fire first start. It's basically his first start of the year, because I'm not even going to count his misfire in the Pegasus Turf. So a good horse making his comeback, and we'll see how he does, and should set him up for a good fall season.
Well, it is just a terrific card, start to finish on Saturday. Today's a good feature as well with the Rancho Bernardo, and Sunday the Del Mar Mile, a big weekend, and there's still lots of big racing between now and Labor Day at Del Mar. Brad, really appreciate it, the extended visit and all the great analysis. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck to everybody out there. Talk to you soon.
The great Brad Free. Brad Free 1 on Twitter. Not a super active on the tweeting front, but analysis just second to none. And I should mention, I didn't bring it up as we wait for James Scully, who's going to join us ahead of Nick Tamaro. The cross country pick 5 tomorrow. It's Del Mar and Saratoga. The Saratoga 5th. Starts things out early, actually, and then you got to kind of bide your time for a little bit. The 5th is a 2-year-old maiden special weight, so you're going to have to do some pedigree work. They're going to go a mile and a 16th on the grass, and you know, maybe you focus in on the. Well, I was going to say on some of the training strength. You've got a pair of Bill Motts, and you've got one from Chad Brown. You've got a Graham Motion in here. You got looks like Todd's got one as well. Cassie on the outside. Actually, Graham's got a pair. I haven't done the. We'll see what Nick. See if Nick's done this race and done the pedigree work yet. two-year-olds going a mile and a 16th. So some tricky things to deal with. George Weaver. What makes Sammy run? How about that? I love it. The fifth, then you have to wait until the ninth. The four-star Dave is the second leg of the cross country. And then seventh, ninth, and tenth from Del Mar, which we just went over, the handicap, the Oaks, and the Pacific Classic. And that's a good sequence. And we'll talk about the four-star Dave, which four-star Dave came up okay. And you've got, you know, obviously Chad to go through, but there's more there than just Chad. Bill Mott with a pair, and they're both prices, and they both are within reach. I mean, obviously Uni and Raging Bull from Chad, the major players, but without Parole, who's been nosing around for his elusive grade one for the Gunthers. Really interesting. Got Stormy, who has been, you know, it's been kind of a struggle, and they're persevering with her. So I'm anxious to see and hear what kind of work notes, how she's looked coming out of her last try. So we will talk to Nick, but we also have Scully, who probably looked at this race as well. James Scully, good morning. Oh, sound like you're at the bottom of a well. Where are we? James. Case, I just barely heard a whisper. Yeah. Pick him up and we'll yeah, anything? No? James?
James, can you hear me?
All right.
Nope.
Ah, there he is.
All right. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I heard you. It was like you were like as faint, like a faint in the distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry about that. Not bad there, but
no problem.
It's got a good weekend of racing for sure, and we are 2 weeks away. 2 weeks from today will be the Kentucky Oaks, and 12 days from today is the 11 days from today is the draw day for the Derby. They draw on Tuesday, September 1st. And right now we're looking, there's 23 listed by Darren and KK yesterday on the possible, you know, on the probable, on the list for the Derby. That doesn't include Pneumatic or Swiss Skydiver. It looks like at least a couple of those. Attachment Raid and Rushy could possibly opt for the Pat Day Mile. Not sure if a horse like Money Moves would run in the race for Pletcher. But at this point, it looks like to me, you know, 18, maybe even 20 is still possible for the entry. And it's, I think, you know, with the Derby and Oaks this year being delayed 4 months, and with, you know, Saratoga and Del Mar still going on Labor Day weekend, it's really fortunate for both the Oaks and the Derby that they have captivating storylines. I think the Oaks is going to be a dynamite race between Swiss Skydiver and Gamin, and then Tis the Law will definitely attract attention because, you know, he's going to be a well-deserving favorite on Derby Day.
Well, we've been tracking it closely, too, and Money Moves, every indication from the Pletcher camp that, yeah, Money Moves would participate if possible. I mentioned earlier that Ron Gierkink of the Daily Racing Form up at Woodbine watched as Cheryl Spite spun a mile in under 140 for Atfield as they continue to work for this unique opportunity for Mr. Fipke. And they're gung-ho. We understand Corey Lannery seemingly attached. And there was also an announcement yesterday in the afternoon that from the Chris Hartman camp, Necker Island, Miguel Mena, and everybody, anybody that listens for any length of time knows I'm a huge Mena fan, and I'm thrilled that he will get a Derby try, and they don't have to worry that he won't ride the hare off of Necker Island. At the same time, I saw a really anguished tweet from Mitch Merle, who was really hurt that he was not given the chance, and hope that Mitch Merle gets these are journeymen that are quality riders, and you know, Mayna further down the line in his career than Merle, but I saw that, and I really praised the, you know, Mayna getting a chance, and was really hopeful that he, you know, would land a spot. And then I saw that from Merle, and you could really sense that he was crushed, that he wasn't going to ride. So chin up to Mitch Merle.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I like both Mayna and Merle. And I'll just add about Cyril Spide. It appears he's been training so well on that Woodbine dirt training track. You know, I wrote the recap of the Marine Stakes, went back before that race and watched his maiden race again. And a horse like Cyril Spide, I mean, he only has two starts, you know, never raced on dirt. But that horse has quality speed. I mean, he's capable of being a pace factor if he gets out of the gate and, you know, can run his race. And even a horse like Happy Saver, who's 2-for-2 as well, he's got some pace to him. So I think a couple of these horses that you wouldn't think would, you know, they don't have any points, Happy Saver and Cyril Spite, but both horses look like they have some quality to them, and they're both front-running types, so it's a little bit interesting for just the pace scenario of the Derby.
Well, and Happy Saver, they had not indicated that of the two pointless I shouldn't really put it that way. They're not pointless. They are without points. of the two Fletchers that did not tally on the Derby trail, they had indicated that Happy Saver wouldn't contest Derby. So of the two, Money Moves was the one that was more interested. I don't know if that's changed, but it as of last week, Happy Saver, I think, was intended for the Jim Dandy. So
okay.
Saratoga closing week. So anyway, that's the latest on the Derby front, and we'll await official. We got basically official words from either McCarthy and from Dale. And on Rushy and attachment rate, and we need a jockey yet for Dr. Post, with Flavian Pratt demurring. He had gotten very close to taking that call, and then they decided to stay out west.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of New York jockeys as well that will be staying at Saratoga that closing weekend. So it provides an opportunity for a lot of local-based jockeys to pick up some mounts for this year's Derby.
Let's dive into the weekend, James. Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll start with the Four Star Dave, and then, you know, go to Del Mar. I thought the race really came up, you know, intriguing. I'm not too keen on the Raging Bull and Without Parole. I wasn't, you know, to me, I just wasn't too thrilled with either horse's effort last time in the Maker's Mark Mile. I think Uni is going to be the horse to beat. I think she's eligible to really move forward off of that Just the Game. But I'm intrigued by Got Stormy. I mean, I don't know if 8-1 is anywhere near realistic on her. I know that she's coming off. I mean, she's run fourth in three of her last four starts, so there's some questions surrounding her. But you mentioned earlier being interested in looking at that workout report. She just appears to be training sensationally on the turf at Saratoga. She ran two big races last year on the turf there. She loves the course. She could get a comfy, favorable front-running trip alongside or just off of Holiday. And, you know, so those are the two that I want in that race are Uni and Got Stormy for any pick three or pick five wager, Steve.
We're right back. Right back to Uni and Got Stormy. I mean, it doesn't matter what's happened in between the Breeders' Cup and everything else. Here we are again. Okay.
Yes.
I'm all right. That's all right with me.
All right. And I'll just go right to Del Mar. I've taken a look at these Del Mar Stakes. If you want to switch out there,
you bet.
I'll work backwards just from the Pacific Classic. I was glad to hear that Sharp Samurai will run in the race, it sounds like. You know, he was, you know, instead of running on the Del Mar Mile. My main opinion in there, the one horse I don't want to use is Mick Court. I don't think the mile and a quarter distance favors him. And, you know, off that big effort last time, I think he's really vulnerable. Obviously, Maximum Security is a horse to beat. Be no surprise to see him get it done at odds on. But I am a little bit intrigued by Higher Power. I think he's going to improve off that last effort on the stretch out. And the potential exists for him to get a good setup if Midcourt and Maximum Security hook up in front of him. And so I'll look to add Higher Power to my multi-race tickets, obviously focusing upon Maximum Security as well. He's the most logical winner. But Higher Power is a little bit intriguing, I think, going back to mile and a quarter on Saturday.
Well, and Brad Free indicated the same kind of thing, that, you know, that is the, you know, if you're looking for a vulnerability factor, that's certainly what it is.
Yes. And then the race right before the Pacific Classic is the Del Mar Oaks. I mean, just a tough race. I, you know, one of my opinions in there was Laura's Light is just a really classy filly. She's won her last four races on turf, all stake races. But I just think that outside post, coupled with the pace scenario, with all the speed that appears to be in this race, is going to make it difficult for her. I'm willing to take a stand against Laura's Light in this race. I'm going to give the edge to number three, Miss Extra, in her U.S. debut for Mandela. Here's a filly that strung together three wins in France, including a Group 2 before, not running very well in the French Oaks, but I'm willing to excuse that effort. I look for her to get a good setup. The mile and an eighth distance also looks like a perfect fit for her. A couple of the horses I'll look to use, though, on multi-race sets, Steve, are number four, Warren Showtime. I thought that was a solid effort last time. I think she could get the right setup, be running late in there. And I'm a little bit intrigued, and Warren Showtime's a cowbred. I'm a little bit intrigued by a cowbred drawn in post two in this California Cook, who is coming off back-to-back seconds for Peter Miller. Could envision a ground-saving trip for her. So those are the horses I'm going to use, are California Cook, Miss Extra, and Warren Showtime in my multi-race bets. And I'm going to give the edge to Miss Extra in the Del Mar Oaks.
Nice. It does feel like the race, given how well-balanced and well-matched this group looks, that it is one of the places you're going to have to spread a little bit.
Right. And then the Del Mar Handicap, I mean, really, that's a race where you've got to respect the heck out of United. I mean, he's so tough, especially at like a mile and a 3/8 distance, really like looks like it's a good fit for him. But the rail post is not ideal. It'll be interesting to see whether he shows speed. I think he's very eligible to just to burst out of there and go right to the lead with Flavian Pratt. And he could catch a little bit of pressure from the outside from horses like Big Buzz and others. I like number nine, Oscar Dominguez. I'm going to give him the edge in here. I thought he really got into good form for Richard Baltus earlier this year. I really liked his over the winter. I really liked his effort last December in that Hollywood Turf Cup at Del Mar, where he beat United that day. I thought he came back and ran a bang-up race in the San Marcos. And his last two races are on good turf. I mean, those are rain-softened courses. He ran okay in the San Luis Rey and the Elkhorn last time at Keeneland. He totally walked out of the gate, was too far back, but did pass horses in the stretch, and it provides a good level of fitness for him. I look for him to get a decent setup here and really finish strong under Drayden Van Dyke.
Nice.
And then, and the other one I would use in there, I mean, is Originaire. I think he's another horse. Last time in Eddie Reed, I didn't think Originaire got a good trip in that race. I'm expecting him to run back better. He really ran, he really has started to come on, I thought, in his last few starts for Jeff Mullins before that Eddie Reed, and I think he's eligible to bounce back. United, I wouldn't throw him out of it multi-races just because, he could just be just too good for this bunch. It's not the strongest field, but I like Oscar Dominguez and Originaire as well.
I agree. This is one of those decisions based on when it comes to the multi-race sequences, one of those decisions where you say, do I lean completely on United, who does really, you go through this one time without thinking about it, and he looks like a single. You you base your ticket structure on you know how much you've got to spend, and smaller budgets, I think you'd probably end up singling United. I at least that was my initial reaction.
And then the first two stakes of the day, and the Green Flash kicks it off. I think there's a hot pace in that race, that 5-furlong turf sprint. I look for Chaos Theory to run well for Sadler from off the pace. I you know, obviously Sparky Bill is going to take a lot of money from the rail, and he's dangerous as well. But I thought Chaos Theory, you know, really, you know, might prove to be a savvy claim by the Hronas brothers. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's trained, it looks like, favorably. Got a 47-2 work over the Del Mar turf course. And, you know, if he's ready to go for John Sadler off the freshening, he looks like he's got a chance in that Green Flash to me. And then in the Torrey Pines, I'm keen on Secret Keeper in there. I did think that last race on July 25th, that was on a Saturday earlier in the meet, and really won with authority. That dam side would provide some encouragement for her to stretch out the two turns, and, you know, really a promising into mischief filly for Cliff Seitz.
James Scully with us, everybody. James_Scully111 and on your TwinSpires blog roll. And James, do we have a last minute Friday push?
We do. I'm gonna do the last minute Friday push right in the Rancho Bernardo tonight. Artistic Diva, 8-1. She's been competitive at this level. Has, you know, she's had a little bit of a trouble stringing together races, a 5-year-old mare, real lightly race, but this is her third start in the last 7 weeks, gets blinkers off. I look for her to really run a good race here from just off the pace, Artistic Diva.
Nice. Well, there it is, the LMFP, the last-minute Friday push from James Scully. James, good luck this weekend, and when we talk next Friday into the month end, and after we talk, we'll be winging our way to Louisville, so we'll be seeing you soon.
All right, sounds good. Look forward to it, Steve. You have a great weekend as well.
James Scully, everybody, exactly 90 minutes in, 90 to come. We'll take our only break of the morning. I promised you that I would get you those 5 minutes back, and we're going to do it. We'll take our only break, and when we come back, Nick Tamaro will join us. We'll get Nick's take on the Saturday action and see if there's anything he particularly likes today. Plus, we'll get a little bit of review in from the last few days as well with Nick, because I didn't talk yet about yesterday. Luis Saez. Saez rounding into form, to say the least, with the demonstration he put on yesterday. Let's step back and look for Nick. We've got who else? Dave Grennan coming and Jay Pridman, and I think maybe a Mike Welch last couple of minutes. Maybe get a couple of Derby Oaks updates on workers at the spa. Back after this, second half, weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Naira Betts.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for
for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.